Hello and welcome to Manx Radio, where you're listening to our general election candidate interview series. I'm Amy Griffiths and I'm our election producer here. Next month, you'll get to have your say on who should represent you in the House of Keys. We're giving all the candidates the chance to take part in a 30-minute interview about who they are, why they're standing, and why they deserve your vote. Today, we're hearing from Daphne Kane, who's standing in Garth. She's been speaking to Lewis Foster.
Today I'm talking to Daphne Kane, who is seeking re-election in the constituency of Garth. First elected in 2016, she's been a member of the House of Keys for 10 years now. Currently, as we heard, she's also the Education, Sport and Culture Minister. Mrs. Kane is an independent candidate and says her focus continues to be on education, health and housing, and her other priorities include the economy, environment, heritage and culture. So let's get into it. Daphne Kane, a decade in politics. Why are you standing again?
Because I think I have more to offer to the people of Garth and the wider Isle of Man. I have the experience now of exactly how government works. I have the enthusiasm to carry it forward, and I believe I'm in a good position to deliver real positive change for the constituents.
With respect, did you not have the experience 5 years ago?
I had quite a bit of experience, particularly of the legislative process, because I brought two private members' bills forward. But this time I think I have government experience now, obviously, having spent 2.5 years as Education, Sport and Culture Minister, and prior to that, 2.5 years chairing the Climate Change Board.
Well, let's go over that, looking back over the past 5 years. Like I say, aside from your ministerial role, you've had a short spell with the Department for Enterprise as political member with responsibility for Visit Isle of Man and Motorsport. That was in 2024. You were the chair of the Climate Change Transformation Board between 2021 to 24. You've been on a number of committees as well, and now you're currently a member of the Tynwald Standards and Privileges Committee. Plenty of meetings attended in that time, I'm sure. What have you actually achieved?
Well, I think the part you didn't mention was actually while the 2.5 years serving on a board and not in government, I was deputy speaker and I was also on serving on the Social Affairs Policy Review Committee. And I think looking back at that time, that ties into the priorities that I had in health. And I think stated in my manifesto or previous interviews, one of the reports that we brought forward while I was in Social Affairs Committee was looking at the oral health and hygiene of children's teeth, and very strongly recommended that we took action, particularly looking to examples further afield like the Falklands, doing fluoride painting of children's teeth. And actually, I was really happy to see that programme is being rolled out by Public Health this year. So I would say that that's an achievement. And there are other things that I've brought forward, including supporting following the Poverty Committee and other committees' reports, which I think actually backbenchers have a real opportunity to drive policy changes across the government to bring social change in particular. And there are policies looking at in terms of increasing the provision for additional needs within our schools, how that's provisioned, especially how it's supported under the childcare strategy, increasing the amount of support for nursery pet placings, not only this year increasing the amount that people can claim each month to contribute towards their nursery fees, but also not just for preschool year, extending it to the pre-preschool year, which is the year in which children turn 3, as well as the year in which they turn 4.
What have you done for the constituents of Garth over the past 5 years?
Well, it's been very changeable range of issues that people have brought up. I regularly attend Garth commissioners' meetings, and I also attend, as much as I am able to, Onchan commissioners' meetings. And you do get a sense of what's happening on the ground. I have seen a drop off actually in the numbers attending political surgeries. There were a couple that nobody came. Now, either everybody's completely content.
Does that show that they've lost faith in you?
Well, they've been co-hosted with a member of the commissioners, generally speaking, but I've seen a big increase in the number of direct contacts. So I think people don't want to spend a Saturday morning or an evening coming along to see you in a public forum. Quite often they are sensitive subjects or personal issues, and very often they're looking for advocacy, support, quite often signposting of where it can go. Quite a number of health concerns, but also access to government services.
Is there much you really can do when a constituent comes to you with a problem like that? And do you think you were more effective as a backbencher or as a minister?
I think when you are supporting and assisting your constituents on constituency matters, there are various levels and degrees of success. Quite a lot are related to the condition of roads, potholes, and as much as any member of the public is able to report issues that need and require immediate attention, sometimes it does help if you also get your MHK. And quite often I've been out, I've looked at the issues, I've photographed it, I've supported those issues going in. And the ones I'm getting are particularly flood-related issues, right, as well as potholes and others.
Any member of the public, though, can log those potholes?
They can. Sometimes when they haven't managed to get any action, and we are able to amplify and highlight particular issues. And I have had a degree of success with several constituency issues brought to us. And very often the health concerns, I do think MCALS is a great service. And I've always found that referring constituents to that or writing through Manx Cares Advisory Liaison Service is very helpful in getting answers, even if it isn't always what people want to hear.
Let's have a look at your priorities then. You've given us a list: education, health and housing, the economy, environment, heritage and culture. What about sport?
I think sport's in a very good place on the Isle of Man. I think we are exceptional. Having just returned from the opening days of the Commonwealth Games, I'm delighted to see the medal, a bronze medal, being won for the 10,000 metres. I also have had the honour of opening the Manx Youth Games for the last couple of years. And the opportunities for sport and the investment in sport, including the capital programme that we have in place for improvements to the National Sports Centre in readiness for the 2029 Island Games. Well, the Isle of Man is a sporting nation. So it's not my priority necessarily, because I think there are other areas that need the attention. I'm content we've just brought out the next 10-year sports strategy for sport, which covers where we're going for the next 10 years. I don't think that's a priority in that I think that's in a good place.
Or were you just not thinking about it when putting together your manifesto?
Well, I'm not. When looking at all the issues across our island, there are other issues such as the economy that have a higher priority at the moment. And in terms of the issues that are being raised with me from the constituents, housing, our environment, both the built environment and the natural environment, and absolutely the economy, I think have to be a greater priority.
But we look at things like the NSC and the tiles in the pool. We look at the swimming pool, the southern swimming pool. We've heard about calls for a new AstroTurf at the bowl, for example. Some in the sporting world would say, actually, it does need to be a priority, Minister.
They are in hand. They are in train, if you like. We have the sporting strategy. We have significant, in the millions of pounds, investment going into the NSC. We have proposals for replacing the grandstand roof at the NSC, including solar panels and new provision there. The issue of the tiles, I accept fully, it is a real frustration to everybody who works at the National Sports Centre, as well as to the users, and everything that is being that can be done is being done in order to resolve that issue
before the Island Games.
Absolutely.
Let's have a look at some of your other priorities then. What would you say is your top priority? What's the one thing this upcoming administration absolutely has to prioritise?
The economy, because without a healthy, functioning and profitable economy, nothing else can happen, because we won't have the income to support all the other things we need to do, including health and education, environment, etc., and culture and heritage as well. And I do want to see investment. You know, I was delighted with the vote finally to complete the reinstallation of the horse tramway. Obviously, I have a role as chair of the Douglas Bay Tramway Heritage Trust, and as a piece within our transport network, I think the Isle of Man, and particularly Laxey, in fact, could well qualify to be a World Heritage site. I think that we have, because of the economic constraints that the Isle of Man's been under for a number of years, I think we have seen a reduction in the investment that has supported our heritage attractions generally.
Putting aside your love of heritage, can the Isle of Man afford £2.5 million, maybe £3 million on the horse tram right now, if it's your priority for the next administration?
It's a priority because Tim Walt has approved that funding to go forward. I think,
but can
absolutely,
it afford it?
Yes, absolutely, it can afford it. And as has been demonstrated by the SISTRA previous transport reviews that the Department of Infrastructure has undertaken, every pound spent on heritage railways pays back £2.88 into our economy because of the value to visitors. And as we've just heard the latest figures for last year's visitor numbers, they are creeping up, jumping up to 350,000 now in the last year. And I'm aware that they've been in around the 300,000 to 320,000 for several years, because my previous employment, when I was helping promote the Isle of Man's tourism and heritage, between 1996 and 2005, the numbers were around 340,000 then. So it is wonderful to see that all the policies of the island, the investment in the accommodation in particular, as well as the heritage and tourist offering that the Isle of Man provides, is starting to see that. And I do feel with the Isle of Man film set at the TT that we have real potential to capitalise on the huge amount of publicity that the Isle of Man's going to benefit from.
And that would be one income stream, of course. But what, would you be willing to make tough decisions in terms of cutting services? What did you think of the health levy that was proposed by this last administration?
I can appreciate why it's there. I think where I am is in terms of social care. I do think that there are inequalities, and inequalities in young children, in the provision for young children experience social disadvantage, as well as elderly care, and the disparity between those who qualify for state assistance and those who don't. And that has always been a real issue with a large number of the constituents. And I think the work that has been undertaken, years of work, and we've had various options presented to us, I do think there is a case for saying that we need to fund and provision social care more evenly. And likewise, in terms of the health levy, I don't agree with that. I think it should all be part of our health, National Health Service provision. But I do agree with the new arrivals from outside the common travel area that they should be
an immigration levy
for healthcare in particular.
And that's how you'd pay for the ideas you're proposing to level out the inequalities you've.
No, I think we need to have a big conversation about the social care. Another one that where I see inequalities is in pension provision. And I think that potentially we need to incentivise, encourage workplace pensions to be taken out to a greater extent than they are now, because I do see that puts people into poverty in their later years.
Where do you stand on the triple lock?
I am expecting that the UK government will have to review that. I think it has had an excellent impact in increasing pensioner income over the last 10, 15 years, how long it's been in. But I wrote in a newspaper article, I feel that it is time to break the triple lock. I think we have, for generational fairness, to protect the funds for all those who are 40 and below, that yes, it needs to be the minimum of 2.5% increase, and the inflation related, but not the wage related element.
In terms of inequality, just one final question. Do you think inequality has grown? Has it gotten worse over the past 5 years?
I don't know that it's got worse, but possibly not much better. There are elements and positives that we have brought, but there is a lot more to be done.
You did mention it in your previous manifesto. What have you done over the past 5 years to resolve inequality?
Well, as I've said, in the role within education, there has been an expansion of provision for additional needs. There has been the childcare strategy, the increase in childcare nursery support, the child benefit has increased as well. Mm-hmm. So there are many things across government, small things that have been done, but I think that we can and ought to aspire to do more.
Right, let's move to another area then, environment. I noticed in your priorities for 2021, you said your constant priorities have been education, the environment and climate change. You haven't mentioned climate change so far. And we have to talk about climate change and we have to talk about renewable energy, because the prospect of an offshore wind farm is undoubtedly one of the biggest, if not the biggest, election issue facing the constituency of Garth. Ørsted's plans are right off the east coast there. We know that the Attorney General's chambers have said any candidate who states an opinion on this may have to recuse themselves from the decision-making process, a decision which will be made by the next Council of Ministers. But will you, right here, right now, tell me honestly, are you for or against the Moore Vannin project?
I can tell you that I am in favour of renewable energy, particularly wind, as the cheapest and cleanest form of energy generation, whether it's onshore or offshore. I am not going to comment specifics of a live planning application. I completely understand and even share some concerns that is it too big, is it too close? But we have put in the Marine Infrastructure Management Act. We have a legal process and we are in the middle of that process. There have been hundreds and hundreds of submissions made to the expert examining body, and that panel is considering all those submissions, every aspect of this planning application. And our legal process is that they will come to a decision. Whatever they determine will be presented to the Council of Ministers that is in place after the election. And that Council of Ministers will have the task, as long as they haven't conflicted themselves by expressing an opinion on this particular application, that Council of Ministers will be able to consider whether or not to, if it's a decision to go ahead, whether or not to support that decision, and with any conditions that we don't know are in place.
Do you think that answer is good enough for the people of Garth?
That's the only answer I can give as a responsible legislator. Otherwise, we undermine our whole legal process. Otherwise, you're saying you're jumping to a conclusion or a verdict in a, you know,
it
you
sounds
wouldn't,
though, like you are expecting to be a minister who will be making that decision when that's not guaranteed. And the people of Garth on the doorstep will want you to say yes or no about a major project that could be built 6 miles off their shore and in their view. So what do you say to the people of Garth?
I share that. I live on the coast. I live at 400 feet elevation.
And does that not recuse you from the decision-making process to begin with?
Potentially, people might think I have already a conflict. But I still don't think it is a responsible thing to do to set aside the evidence base for any decision and the legal process that we have put in place, however flawed people think it is.
Do you think it's flawed?
Every time there is a planning application, if it was down to a politician, this is why we separated politics in the main from the planning committee. And there might be an argument to say that the chair should be non-political as well. But we have planning law. We set out a strategic plan. We set out planning conditions. Then applications can be made, whether it's for a development of first-time buyer housing or mixed housing, or whether it's major infrastructure, onshore or offshore. The onshore one, I think it is an absolute given that the positive thing for both maintaining and assisting our energy security and maintaining the cost of our electricity provision, if not reducing it, would be to get onshore wind turbines. Where it goes, again, there are many, many environmental impact studies, wildlife studies being undertaken before that can even be put forward as an application. But absolutely, onshore wind turbines in the appropriate place, in the best place that the Isle of Man can have them to harness that natural wind energy is a positive for the Isle of Man. The offshore wind turbines are different because this was seen as an economic proposition. It fell out, I think, of the big picture, the KPMG economic study that was done. We absolutely need to diversify our economy. Our Manx territorial seas are have amazing potential to do that, but it absolutely has to be in a balance with what that benefits in economic terms to the Isle of Man, because absolutely, given the cost pressures that are coming forward, given the investment in new schools that the Department of Education, Sport and Culture is hoping to bring forward, we need to maintain our income.
What do you, where do you think the majority of Garth residents sit on this?
That is hard to say. Social media, I would say, very largely opposed, but not all.
Social media, there is an active campaign group that's been outside Tynwald. Have you spoken with that campaign
group?
There is.
I didn't manage to catch them because we were particularly busy in Tynwald. But I have had sit-down meetings with residents who are impacted by this in constituents' homes. And I have also heard from the supporters of offshore wind. But even supporters have some questions whether it's the appropriate size and scale and proximity for the island, whether there's a lot more acceptance should the power, should Manx Utilities negotiate to have some of that power be harnessed and come to serve the Isle of Man. And there are some who are a smaller percentage so far, and I haven't managed to get around any houses yet. Having been far too busy in Tynwald and with the department. So most of the feedback I have had has been against it completely because of the visual impact. There is a smaller proportion in the middle, maybe 30%, who are prepared to accept it if we are able to benefit from the power generated, and a smaller, maybe 10%, who would be in favour of such a scheme.
Now, 5 years ago, I was listening back to your candidate interview from 2021. You said, "I just think the Isle of Man, with our green hills by the sea, we should be a green island and blast that out to the world and be a centre of excellence in renewable energy." On renewable energy infrastructure, you asked, "Why are we so far behind everywhere else when we've got all these natural resources we should be capturing?" Do you think it's fair, and do you understand why people might have a proposed opinion of you that you are in favour of this project?
I'm in favour of it in principle, absolutely, and I stand by that. Green hills by the sea and a hub or an island of excellence in terms of the balance between harnessing the renewables and other baseload generation. But it all has to be within balance. Now, if we look at the biosphere reserve, the UNESCO biosphere reserve status, we will be looking to have that reaccredited come the autumn, I believe, after 10 years. I think the Isle of Man absolutely wants to live up to that. And in terms of that accreditation, part of it is education. A lot of it is about the environment. But the modern world we are in, the amount of climate change that we see daily happening around us, the shocking amount of wildflowers, the extensive drought that most of England is now facing, it's undeniable that the climate is changing and that we are getting warmer summers and we're getting wetter and more violent winter weather, that we do need to contribute towards reducing our emissions. We have a climate change plan that was supported by Tynwald. We are, when I was the first half of this term, when I was serving as chair of the Climate Change Transformation Board.
You stood down as the chair of the Climate Change Transformation Board in 2024, saying you wanted to focus on your role as Education Minister. Surely that was an opportunity to grasp two of your election manifesto priorities from the last time around and take a real control of them. So why walk away?
Well, I think that the Chief Minister would have had something to do with that. Being a minister, you have an increased workload. And in fact, to juggle education and sport and culture and my constituency matters, I'm also a board member on Culture Vannon, various other heritage interests, as I've mentioned, there aren't enough hours in the day to do both jobs thoroughly to the level they need. Having said that, I have progressed.
The environment minister is now the chair of the Climate
yes.
Change Transformation Board.
But up until the... So one of the policies where it was there, and it is... It's very hard for people to accept change, because we're changing people's homes and how homes are built and how heating systems particularly are put in. But one of the policies announced in 2024 was the stopping of new homes having fossil fuel boilers. Lot of noise at the time, and there is a plan that will come, that no replacements in the future. But now, completely accepted. Selling point on all the developers' homes, this home comes with solar panels and air source heat pump. And you would not go back. And I think it's because we're in a time of transition, the government's job is to set the policies to encourage and incentivise people, which it is very much doing. The £6 million spent directly into people's homes, along with, I think it's £8 million in total, with the energy efficiency scheme, helping people insulate their homes properly, draft excluders, making them more efficient, using less energy to heat them, whatever that is. And now with the Heatwise scheme that has just been approved, that people will have the ability to have the audits of their homes to see if they are able to adapt. And for those people who are able to, air source heat pumps. And the benefit is not only the reduction in emissions, it is in the reduction of cost for a more energy efficient home using an alternative or an increasingly renewable heating system, particularly when the island goes to more renewable generation.
Okay. I'm keeping an eye on the time, and I just want you to think back to 2021 as well, and the Daphne Kane of 5 years ago. Would that Daphne Kane be proud of what you've achieved now?
I think I'd be amazed, in fact. I do still get moments of imposter syndrome doing this job, pinch me moment to meet last week at the opening ceremony, the phenomenal opening ceremony of the Commonwealth Games, and I was fortunate enough to meet King Charles and the Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, along with the Duke of Edinburgh and the Scottish First Minister as well. It has been, that's probably the most recent highlight. Across the years that I've been in education, pushing forward the schemes for our new builds, having the Park Road paper submitted that says, yes, we do need that for a primary school replacement to Skull and Jubilee. The amount of investment that we have been putting into early years, and in particular to the additional needs, including the new English curriculum that is across all our schools from year one to year seven, the English entitlement framework.
What would you say is the most disappointing moment of the past 5 years for you?
I think that would be the politics. I loved the job. I'm really proud to be able to do this job. I've come to the conclusion I really hate the politics when it becomes personality politics or point scoring. I think the Isle of Man and Tynwald as an institution, we are so fortunate to have this tricameral system. It does work very well. I think we work better as a consensus, as always, with people working together. I think it's not... it is a healthy situation to have everybody pulling together, and we achieve so much more when that happens.
Okay, Daphne Kane, we have about a minute left. Why should somebody in Garth vote for you in the 2026 election?
I'm passionate about the Isle of Man. I have made this my home. My children are here. My children, I hope, will be wanting to come back here after university. The Isle of Man is a really special place. It has an amazing community. There are things that I think I can bring to it in terms of improving our health, our education, the environment for all on the Isle of Man. And I will always bring energy. I will always want to do what is the best interests of Garth constituents and the wider Isle of Man to make it a better future for everybody.
That was Daphne Kane, who's standing for election in Garth. Also standing in the constituency are Anthony Allen, Sean Bostrom, Aisling Creer, Vicky Hewison, Peter Kameen and Martin Perkins. You can listen back to this interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And for everything you need to know about the general election on Thursday, the 24th of September, head to manxradio.com, where you can find our dedicated website.